Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacey on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we talk to independent journalist J.P. Sotilli of NewsVandal.com. But first, Senator Joseph McCarthy once said, our jobs as Americans and as Republicans is to dislodge the traitors from every place where they've been sent to do their traitorous work. Today, he might add the Democrats to his list of patriots dislodging traitors, traitors to the lie that Hillary and the Clinton political machine would have won if, in fact, they had not lost. Yes, lost. Hillary apparently lost. That makes Hillary a loser. Loser. Her media myth makers are losers, too. Such losers, they lost to an orange baboon with a fondness for vulgar narratives, racist insults, and moronic tweets. Clinton, loser. Loser, Clinton. Oh, so sad. Oh, so sad. Stacey, Stacey.
Sad, sad, sad. And yet, because of this sadness of the loser who refuses to lose, we have a lot of craziness. Now, some people are calling it neo-McCarthyism, including Stephen F. Cohen, who's a professor of Russia history at Princeton and NYU. He was around during the first Cold War and was often on the news back then as an expert on things related to the Soviet Union. Now, in this new Cold War 2.0, some call it, he's no longer allowed on the news because they don't want to hear the other side. The headline reads, Neo-McCarthyism and the New Cold War. The preceding Cold War generated a prolonged slurring and suppression of dissenting American voices, and it may be happening again. This is him on TheNation.com. And he says the current neo-McCarthyism might be traced back to the 1990s when a few Americans were critical of the Clinton administration's blanket support for Russian President Boris Yeltsin's domestic policies that savaged Russian society and the economy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Remember, Boris Yeltsin was America's puppet in Russia, and he was instrumental in bringing in the Washington Consensus, neoliberal capitalism. And he gave rise to the what we now refer to as the Russian oligarchs and kleptocrats. He was on Time magazine, featured pretty much as America's puppet, and everybody was happy with that. And now we have a situation where Hillary Clinton has lost, and instead of blaming the fact that Democrats lost across the board in every possible category you could come up with, they lost or lost influence or lost power. They've decided to reach back to the playbook of Joseph McCarthy and do a little scapegoating. It was one of America's saddest moments, the whole McCarthy period, because it was reminiscent of the scapegoating of World War II that was done in Germany. So here you have Americans doing some scapegoating. And then a great journalist like Edward R. Murrow, you know, stood up and smited Joseph McCarthy, smacked him good, and punctured the bubble. That was McCarthyism, and it was all over. I would imagine we'll have a similar moment. Maybe a Donald Trump or someone will step up and say, you know what, I'm going to smite you, folks, and it'll be all over.
Well, an important difference between now the neo-McCarthyism and McCarthyism, if you go online, Google it, and look for Joseph McCarthy and quotes from him, he always saw a communist under every bed. There were communists in the State Department. There were communists in Hollywood. There were communists, you know, in the Defense Department. It was all about communists. He didn't say there was Russians. Now it's like the Democratic Party and the MSNBC and CNN sort of media are saying basically if you're Russian. Well, he's friends with some Russians, and that's guilty enough. That's xenophobia in any other language. Now I want to talk to the alternative media, because some might say that's the Edward R. Murrow of the day, and that's why they're also being called Russian apologists, because remember, it used to be communist apologists, now it's Russian apologists. So let's talk to J.P. Sotilli of NewsVandal.com.
It's Double Down with Max and Stacey.
Oh, yeah, it's a new show on Sputnik Radio.
J.P., Stephen F. Cohen traces what he calls the neo-McCarthyism back to the days of Boris Yeltsin, when the American political immediately cheered on the harsh neoliberal policies that ravaged the Russian economy. Do you agree with this? And what do the neo-McCarthyites want from Russia right now? Is it some sort of economic answer that they're looking for?
Well, I could take that in the reverse. Good to be with you, Max and Stacey. You know, it's funny that much excoriated story that Washington Post put out about propornot.com with the Russian propaganda websites that are muddling the minds of the American people. I actually happen to have either written directly for or been reposted by 11 of those sites. So I guess I have sort of a unique perspective on this. Cohen is right, and we have forgotten the neoliberal shock therapy that was foisted upon the Russian people beginning in 1991 when the Harvard boys, remember the Harvard boys, mm-hmm. Jeffrey Sachs and company?
Jeffrey Sachs.
They went over there and they said, hey, we got to shock you into the modern world, into our style of economics, getting rid of subsidies. There were scenes, for those of us that are old enough to remember, there were scenes of shelves that were notoriously bare during the communist period, but were even more bare during the shock therapy period. And as Max rightly pointed out, really ushered in the period of the oligarchs and sort of kleptocracy. And, you know, Boris Yeltsin was really something of a drunken buffoon. There was a famous, Michael Crowley wrote about this in Politico a couple days ago, and it was something that has stood out in my mind, and I know stands out in the mind of Stephen Cohen. And as you pointed out, Stacey, there was a time at the during the end of the Cold War and after the fall of the Berlin Wall when Stephen F. Cohen was a regular on NewsHour and on all of the big, you know, Sunday shows and the chin wags. That has definitely come to an end because he is, as you say, critical of our amnesia about the extent to which the Clinton administration and Bill Clinton took Yeltsin and propped him up and really, in many ways, humiliated a great power.
Yeah, let me throw in another comparison into the mix here, see what y'all think about this. This whole idea when they did the shock capitalism treatment with Yeltsin in Russia in the early 1990s and the results being catastrophic, it kind of harkens back almost to, remember, Milton Friedman was thrown in and they installed the dictator in Chile, you know, with his theories of neoliberalism at the time, and it ushered in a catastrophic period. It seemed similar to that. Is that off base, or what do you think of that comparison?
No, and I actually think that you can look at the American political system, the two-party system, as a tale of two Friedmans. On the Republican side, it's Milton Friedman. On the Democratic side, it's Thomas Friedman. And one is just sort of, you know, a lighter version of the other.
Right, Friedman being a columnist for the New York Times, Paul Krugman.
You know, right, and he's, you know, globalization is the end-all, be-all. No two countries that have a McDonald's have ever attacked one another. That was the big pronouncement of the 90s. And, you know, the Clinton administration really embraced this Tom Friedman vision of the world, much in the way the Republicans and under Reagan embraced Milton Friedman's vision. And they really are basically on a continuum, the same thing. Ultimately, when you think about the rise of Vladimir Putin, which comes at the end of what was a catastrophic Yeltsin period in the 90s, which was shepherded along by the Clinton administration and by the Harvard boys, by this neoliberal orthodoxy, you know, what did he see? He saw a great power, the former Soviet Union, Russia, just continually humiliated. And there was this famous press conference where Clinton and Yeltsin are together, and Yeltsin is, you know, sort of talking off the cuff, and Clinton is just doubled over laughing and doubled over laughing. And, you know, one of my least favorite words from the times I worked in Washington, D.C., that's two times I worked inside the Beltway, is the word optics. But when you think of the optics of that, of Yeltsin either laughing, making Clinton laugh over and over and over again, sort of the humiliation of it, I think these are things that resonated with both Putin and with the Russian people. And I don't think that the United States or the American people are aware of this. And then when you think about, you know, Stacey asked the second question, what do these neo-McCarthyites want? There's sort of a funny historical symmetry here because McCarthyism arose in no small part out of the question of who lost China. Coming out of World War II, there was this feeling that Mao was basically handed China by commie sympathizers, pinkos inside the State Department, because of course China is supposed to be America's, you know, great marketplace where we're going to sell a widget to everybody in China and make millions of dollars. It's supposed to be our place. I mean, we've had missionaries there forever. It's supposed to be our country, and we lost it. And that gave rise to McCarthyism and, you know, set off what was really one of the sort of the darkest episodes of the post-World War II period. Well, now what do you have? You have Trump, who wants to repeal and replace Russia with China. And the McCarthyism, this neo-McCarthyism that you're talking about, it is in no small part about the fear that China will now be demon number one will be demonized in the ways that many of these people want to continue to demonize Russia.
Hey, let's talk about, keep on this Edward R. Murrow theme for a second. Edward R. Murrow, of course, being the seminal journalist in America who kind of, as I said before, smited Joe McCarthy and popped a bubble there. Let's talk about another comparison here, Julian Assange. Julian Assange, of course, being interviewed on Fox News, and which is a 180-degree turnaround from where they were just a few years ago, pillaring Julian Assange as being treacherous, and now they come around. And because basically two irrefutable facts. Number one, he's got a 100% track record. Nothing they've ever published has ever been proven to be incorrect. And number two, no one has ever come out and said, you know what, we sent them something to publish and they never published it. That, of course, would refer to the Democrats and the Hillary camp. Would complain that they always seem to be attacking me and supporting the other side. Why is that? It's because they've never gotten anything, any leaks that would, you know, that would work the other way, because they simply have not gotten that. So here you have a guy who's got a track record versus Clapper testifying in Congress, who's like a sieve, basically, who's a national security risk at best, and, you know, an idiot, seemingly. And yet they seem to think that's going to carry some weight somehow. I mean, how is that going to work?
Well, Clapper lied under oath about the extent to which the NSA is collecting data. I mean, that happened. He lied under oath about the nature and extent of the NSA's data collection program. So, you know, there is that. You know, Max, we're in a weird time to see Sean Hannity sitting across from Assange and being sort of, you know, treating him with sort of kid gloves, particularly after some of the things that he had said with him. It's just sort of the cowardice of Sean Hannity juxtaposed against the really what I thought was a very good, solid performance by Assange, who himself was careful to say, we did not receive our information from a state entity. Now, of course, after that airs, U.S. intelligence officials, unnamed officials, go to Reuters and say, well, we know that, and we actually think, or we actually have evidence that the person who leaked it to him got that information from a hack. So here comes the counter narrative. So we're in these narratives and counter narratives and strange bedfellows. I mean, ultimately, the interesting thing to me about this is the sort of the multi-purpose use of Russian hacking. The Democrats can use it. The Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democrats, the DNC in particular, can use it to explain away their loss. Of course, Russian hacking did not do anything to keep her campaign from going to Wisconsin one time. She didn't go one time to Wisconsin.
Yes.
That wasn't because of hacking.
Yeah, I know. We've covered that sort of failure of her campaign. So I want to bring it back to this notion of this neo-McCarthyism, because we only have about a minute and a half left.
Okay,
and
yes,
I want to turn to the fact that Ronald Reagan, of course, famously ended the last Cold War. And the end of the last Cold War saw the beginning of a major global boom and bull market. We've had 30, 40 years now of uninterrupted growth, boom times, globalization. Is this new Cold War a symptom of the end of that period of globalization, of an end of neoliberalism? What's your thought?
I think that this new Cold War is a symptom of the end, or it's kind of the death rattle of the hydrocarbon economy.
Oh, elaborate.
Look, solar power is moving apace. It's actually starting to compete with coal. It's competing with hydrocarbons. Russia is an oil power. Saudi Arabia is an oil power. The United States has been an oil power. And they are all seeing their economic paradigm come to an end because solar is coming. It's coming quick. It is competing with coal. It is competing with oil. It is about to put oil into the dustbin of history.
Wow, that's incredible. All right, well, that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Keiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, J.P. Sottile of NewsVandal.com. And until next week, bye, y'all.